I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, well, it turns out that Governor Jay Inslee's goodbye to the people of Washington that he served for 12 years will be a big middle finger. Plus, the real culprit for Washington State's poor leadership is the press. I'll explain. And a so-called solution to protecting kids from deadly drug use in their homes will leave you absolutely speechless. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com, and you can gift a subscription to Undivided to a loved one or an enemy. Patreon.com/undivided/gift. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Man, we were just combing over Governor Inslee's proposed budget in the midst of what we're supposed to believe is a budget crisis. I mean, what do you do in a budget crisis? What do you do if you're $10 to $14 billion allegedly in the hole? Increase spending. That's what you do if you're Governor Jay Inslee. You increase spending by somewhere in the realm of $11 billion over the next 4 years. This whole thing's insane. In fact, we were so rushed getting on. I don't know if any of you caught our mistake. The title of today's show, a baffling level of incompetence, except we wrote a baffling level of incontinence, which his budget might give me a baffling level of incontinence. It's going to get me all locked up in there because I'm so angry about it. It really is stunning to me. And I don't know if he's doing this because, well, he's incompetent. That's just a given. We know that after 12 years. I don't know for sure if he's doing this because he's trying to set governor-elect Bob Ferguson up for success, or he's trying to set him up for failure. Because either of those things could be true. Either he wants to allow Bob Ferguson to be the hero and Bob to come in and continue the charade of being a moderate and say, oh, no, 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 we're not going to increase taxes and increase spending in the middle of a deficit. Sorry, Jay Inslee, I'm going to be sworn in and I'm going to put all of your ideas aside. Or he's going to screw over Bob Ferguson, who feels like he can't get in and go against the wishes of the previous governor of his own political party and some of the things that progressives want. And we're going to talk about those coming up in just a moment. So let's go over this. Inslee came out at about 11:15 this morning and he briefed the media on this. We'll see how the media coverage of it is, but there are a couple things that stand out to me. One of them is he wants $12.9 billion in new taxes. So if you thought for 1 minute that his solution to solving the budget deficit that he's created over the past 12 years would be a serious look at the level of spending and maybe doing some meaningful cuts to waste in state government. Yeah, that's not happening. So he's introducing a number of either new taxes or increased taxes to the tune of $12.9 billion in projected new revenue over the next 4 years. One of them is the dreaded wealth tax. That up until now had been a wish list of the far left fringe, but apparently not anymore. Now it's on the wish list of Governor Jay Inslee. So we're going to dive into that wealth tax coming up. But even more egregious than the increased taxes, because you kind of expect that from Democrats, is a massive increase in spending. So even though they've spent their way into this crisis, because it's a spending crisis, it's not a budget deficit, even though they have spent their way into this crisis, his solution is to spend even more money? For the love of God, if you look at, it's a 78-page budget proposal. I don't expect you to read all of it, but you can look at the line for revised appropriations. So for this biennium, we're spending about $71, $72 billion. By 2027, 2029, he's proposing spending $82 billion. That's an increase of nearly $11 billion over the next 4 years. That's a double-digit percentage increase. When we've just spent ourselves into a budget crisis, and your solution after 12 years in office causing this problem is to spend even more money? That's a level of whether you want to call it incontinence or incompetence. It's not good, okay? So let's go into more detail on these taxes, because I'll tell you this right now. These tax increases and proposals, if they pass, will decimate Washington's economy. And they will serve the opposite of what we're supposed to believe the purpose of them is. We're supposed to believe that this is to increase spending, to close budget deficits and make sure we're not in a budget crisis, right? But if you decimate our economy and scare away businesses and scare away wealthy people and the wealth they bring and inject into our economy, we're going to be in another budget crisis. And the fact that they don't realize that is, again, incompetence. Or they don't care because there's no electoral consequences for them. So there's two big tax proposals that Governor Inslee is putting forth. One is what he's characterizing as business and occupation tax reform. So you've already got the B&O tax. Well, he wants to jack it up significantly. He says the business and occupation tax is based on a company's income and helps pay for essential state services. Under this proposal, only businesses making over $1 million a year in the service and other activities category would see a 20% increase. A 20% increase. He says this change impacts 20,000 businesses and would last from October of 2025 until December of 2026, after which the rate reverts to the pre-October 2025 level. And then, starting in January 2027, all B&O tax rates would see a slight 10% increase. He actually wrote that. A slight 10% increase. As if a 10% increase in the B&O tax is slight. So basically, some of the businesses that make over $1 million, they're going to, for a finite period of time, about a year, they're going to pay a 20% increase. Then it'll go back to the rates that they are right now. And then everyone will have an increase of 10%. Now, the second one is the more extreme proposal. I mean, I would argue the first one is extreme as well. But it's the idea of a wealth tax. A tax on unrealized gains, just about the dumbest thing you could possibly introduce. It says, in his words, by placing a modest 1% tax on worldwide wealth over $100 million, affecting roughly 3,400 of our state's wealthiest individuals, Washington can establish a new, reliable revenue stream that most residents will never pay or even know someone who does. This approach would generate $3.4 billion to invest in essential services like education, housing, and childcare. This reform makes sure the 0.0004% of people who have benefited the most from our economy contribute their fair share so we can protect our progress on the safety nets and systems that keep us all safe, healthy, and secure. Wow, there's a lot to unpack there. Let me touch on a few things that he says there. The people who have benefited the most from our economy, those are also the people who contribute the most to our economy. People who have benefited from our economy, who then have businesses, they employ people, they donate their money, they support our nonprofits, and they do, you might say, you know, they pay a smaller percentage in their taxes, in their overall wealth to taxes, but they still pay far more as an actual figure in taxes. So yes, they've benefited the most from our economy in terms that they've been very successful. But you chalk that up to like, that's our economy that did that for them. No, that's them that did that for themselves, usually, unless they're independently wealthy. And then you turn around and you look at the economic revenue. You look at the revenue for our state that's generated because of their success. And you want to punish them for it. A modest 1%, right? And most people would look at that and say, well, yeah, I'm never going to pay that wealth tax. I'm never going to have $100 million unless I win the lotto or something. And this would, as he says, worldwide wealth. So if you're living in Washington state, regardless of where your wealth is held, they're going to tax it to the tune of 1%. And it would be unrealized gains as well, because a lot of people who are that wealthy, that's tied up in stocks and bonds and things like that, and other assets that they have no intention of selling at the time. So when he says this approach would generate $3.4 billion to invest in essential services like education, housing, and childcare, there's the rub. So this is how this will be spun, because you could say, well, let's run an initiative and repeal it, right? Because what they'll do, if they pass the wealth tax, they will make it an emergency. They'll attach emergency clause on it, which means that we can't run a referendum on it. But let's say we could run an initiative. Let's go. Washington has that down pat. They could run an initiative, collect signatures. Well, because it has to do with taxes and revenue, you see the line right there. If this ever goes to an initiative, what's going to be on the ballot? It's going to say, do you want to repeal this wealth tax that only impacts, you know, 0.004% of Washingtonians? And then it'll have that addendum on it. And it'll say, if you repeal this, it'll take money from education, housing, and childcare. So they're already setting it up to be referendum proof and initiative proof. And it will decimate our economy. Washington State already has when you look at, we've talked about this, remember before the election, there was a Progressive Institute that was trying to prop up Kamala Harris's campaign and trying to act like, no, Kamala Harris and Joe Biden have been great for the economy. And they put out these numbers saying 85% of counties in the United States were seeing a positive increase in new business growth, except Washington State, where every county but one in our state had negative business growth. People aren't starting businesses here. People are closing businesses here. And you think that a 20% spike in the B&O tax is going to be the solution to that? You think entrepreneurs are going to want to come here? You don't think that Amazon is going to pick up and leave? They already left to Bellevue, but if you make something statewide, they're just going to go somewhere else. They've already been doing it. And it's just insane to me. And you don't think that that's going to cost us funding for education, housing, and childcare? These people don't think. Or they do think and they don't care because, again, we don't hand them electoral consequences. Now, again, so remember, up to a $14 billion budget deficit. So you would think in a rational world, like any family would have to do, that you would cut out wasteful spending. Like, what do we really, truly not need? Like the doctor that they're hiring right now to provide concierge medical care to transgender prison inmates, you know, like maybe we don't need that. The specialist who's going to provide laser hair removal to transgender inmates, maybe we don't need that. But those are some small things, right? Stupid, need to go, but still small. Here are some things that Governor Jay Inslee still thinks we need to be spending money on in the middle of a massive budget deficit. Let's see. $5.5 million for World Cup safety and security. Yeah, the World Cup is coming to Seattle in 2026. And because Governor Jay Inslee and the Democratic Party's policies have made cities like Seattle so unsafe, we need an additional $5.5 million just for security around the World Cup. And you know what that means. They're just going to sweep out all the drug users and homeless encampments down as far south as they can get them, push the problem along. They'll station some extra officers, maybe bring in the State Patrol or the National Guard. They'll blow through that $5.5 million lickety-split, and then it's gone. And then all the problems will come back, of course, because they aren't interested in any long-term solutions. Let's see. Oh, this is not a surprise. $14 million for immigration legal aid. Gee, what kind of immigrants need legal aid? Anybody? Nicole, what kind of immigrants do you think need legal aid right now to the tune of $14 million? Must be legal immigrants, right?
Of course.
100%. 100% legal immigrants. Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's for illegal immigrants. $120 million in state bonds for higher education, clean energy projects. Yeah, $120 million. This is what we need to be spending in the middle of a budget crisis for higher education, clean energy projects. Good God. $1.3 billion to provide for inflationary increases for teachers. So you created, your party created an inflationary environment. And so now we've got to give teachers, despite failing test scores statewide, $1.3 billion in raises in the middle of a budget crisis. Gotcha. Oh, and then this one, you know, this is really important, actually. $8.5 million to reduce toxic tire dust. I don't know about you. Every time I go outside, I breathe in and I'm like, oh, the toxic tire dust in my throat. These people are mental. I have to laugh so I don't go crazy. This is mental. This is mental. This is so far from what our expectations should be from government. We shouldn't be in a budget crisis in the first place. Let's start there. We have enough revenue coming into the state. We have enough businesses in the state that have done well. Thank you, businesses. Thank you for helping our state's economy, despite everything our state has done to crap on you. We shouldn't be in a budget crisis at all. Back in 2019, we had so much money coming into the state. Republicans said, hey, you know, we're in a really good place monetarily. Let's take this time to stash some money away for a rainy day and to really think about our spending so it can be sustainable and we can be successful long term. What did Democrats do? Well, they turned around and passed a slew of new taxes to bring even more money in because they were money hungry at that point. Oh, my God. Talk about greed. They were so greedy, the greediest corporation there is. Long-term care tax for a program nobody even wants. Yeah, let's tax them. Take that money out of their paycheck. Capital gains tax so we can scare away the businesses and entrepreneurs. Bah, let's do it. The Climate Commitment Act so we can make people, poor people, poorer at the gas pump and in their energy prices at the food store. Yeah, let's do it. They brought that in after 2019, after all these warnings, more money, more money, more money, more money. And they spent it like crazy and they spent themselves into a $14 billion budget deficit. So what is Governor Inslee's excuse here? Because there has to be an excuse, right? How could you justify in any form or fashion increasing spending by $11 billion when we're facing a budget deficit. Here's what he says. History shows the long-term consequences of cutting too deeply during tough times. To avoid repeating our past mistakes, we must maintain momentum in these areas and modernize our regressive tax structure to better serve all residents. So for him, we can't cut too deep. And he points to in his budget, we cut too deep after the recession and education suffered and our mental health system suffered. Yeah, that had nothing at all to do with your incompetence and your inability to spend the money that we have to good effect. So it's like, we can't cut. There's nowhere to cut. Nowhere to cut. Can't think of a single damn thing to cut. And so what we have to do is focus on modernizing our regressive tax structure, which is what he talks about when he proposes the wealth tax and the increase in B&O taxes. And there's four full pages in the budget, his budget proposal, that's dedicated to explaining how regressive our tax structure is and how the wealthiest people aren't paying their fair share. Do you think that there's one thing in that four pages that reduces taxes for the middle class? Not one. You talk about how unfair our tax structure is, how it's burdening the lower class and the middle class. And remember, we've talked about this many times. Their solution to that, let's say you've got the middle class taxes here as a portion of their income, richest of the rich paying a smaller portion of their income, which is true. So instead of saying, let's make it more fair by trying to spend wisely and bring down taxes for the middle class, they're not going to do that. They think making it more fair, keeping taxes where they're at for the middle class, and just raising taxes for the rich, they're not giving you a tax break. And they've done quite the contrary. As much as they complain about regressive taxes and the impact on the middle class, the ones I just explained to you, the long-term care tax, you think rich people have to pay the long-term care tax? No, they have private long-term care insurance. And they had it long before this was even a thing, because they can afford it. That's the middle class and the poor who are seeing that come out of their paycheck. You think that the ultra rich care if they have to pay 50 cents more per gallon at the gas pump, or if their energy rates go up in the push for electrification, or if they have to pay more at the grocery store for food because of the Climate Commitment Act? They don't care. That affects the poor and the middle class. So as much as Democrats complain about our backward tax structure, oh, it's hurting the people who can least afford it. Their taxes, their decisions that continue to this day are hurting the people who can least afford it. And they want to make you believe, they want to gaslight you into believing that they're doing something positive for you by increasing taxes on the rich. They haven't done jack shit for you. Your taxes are the same. And arguably, they're going to get worse, because the longer the Climate Commitment Act continues, the fewer carbon credits there are at auction, the higher those auction prices go up, and thus the higher your gas prices will be in the years to come. And the higher your grocery store prices will be in the years to come. Energy prices, they're not talking about reducing that for you. They want you to believe they're doing something wise and just, while sticking it to you at the exact same time. I don't know what it'll take to get people to stop falling for it. Oh, let's raise taxes on the rich. No, you should be, instead of in the streets like, tax the rich, you should be saying, hey, stop taxing the poor. Stop taxing the middle class. Or hell, do both. If taxing the rich, we're never going to get them to stop doing that. If you are taxing the rich and you're saying, what did he say it would come over? $3.4 billion a year? Hold on, I want to look at this. I want to get it right. Over a four-year total, over the next 4 years, the wealth tax would bring in $10.3 billion and the B&O tax increase would bring in $2.6 billion. So are you going to then, to make things fair, because you said this is about making things fair, are you going to reduce the burden on the poor and middle class on these regressive taxes by eliminating $13 billion in taxes on the poor and middle class? Of course they're not. They're going to tax the rich to pay for more things that we do not need, to pay for more programs that aren't working, to put toward an education system that has declining enrollment and decreasing test scores, and worse outcomes than ever before. To put toward solving a homeless crisis that gets worse the more money we put into it. You're not going to benefit from the increased taxes on the rich at all. And you're going to be just as poor, if not more poor, than you were before the taxes on the rich take effect. That's what people on the left and progressives, if you believe our tax system is regressive, you should be in the streets chanting, not just tax the rich, stop taxing us. Cut our taxes. Let us keep more of our own money to spend on the things that we need as a family, not to spend on sending a doctor to Monroe or Walla Walla State Penitentiary to cut off the genitals of a transgender inmate or to give them laser hair removal. This stuff is it's not hyperbole. This is what's going on. And I don't know what it's going to take for people to realize it. And I had mentioned this sort of push and pull between, okay, what is Bob Ferguson going to do now? Because what Jay Inslee just proposed today on his way out the door, final middle finger to Washingtonians, is completely in contrast to what Bob Ferguson told the Seattle Times about how he would approach the budget when he's sworn in. He hasn't been sworn in yet. So it's Governor Inslee's job right now to propose his budget, and then Bob Ferguson can be sworn in and throw it all to hell if he wants. But here's what he told the Seattle Times last week. A governor-elect Bob Ferguson says he's not ready to back tax increases just yet. We are looking at savings, efficiencies, how we can do better as a state. That's the first, second, and third conversation, as far as I'm concerned, before even entertaining anything else. Well, have you seen Governor Inslee's budget? Because the first, second, and third conversation is new taxes before even entertaining any tax cuts. In fact, he's increased spending. You know, toxic tire dust, got to get rid of that. Clean energy programs for higher education, $5.5 million for World Cup security. All these really, really important critical things he must pay for in the middle of a budget crisis. So we'll see what Bob Ferguson does. Either this is Jay Inslee intentionally setting up Bob Ferguson to be able to convincingly continue his moderate charade for the time being. He's saying, hey, I'm gonna put out a shit budget that totally makes no sense. And you can come in and you can save the day. But I don't think Jay Inslee likes Bob Ferguson. I've heard that from people behind the scenes. He does not like Bob Ferguson. He's doing this to screw him over. And now Bob Ferguson is going to come in and tell the progressive wing of his party, the 13 state senators who have already pre-filed a wealth tax or giving unemployment benefits to striking workers, rather. He's going to come in and tell them, no, all these things you want, absolutely not. No. No, because he cares about power and he is beholden to the system and the party that put him in power. No matter how much he wants to act as if he's not, he is. So Bob Ferguson is not going to do anything different than Jay Inslee has done, despite calling himself a change agent on the campaign trail. Now, all of this to say, I don't blame Jay Inslee. Jay Inslee has the intellect of a potato. It's true. I try not to be mean on this show, but if you've ever sat down in front of him and had a conversation with him as I have, he has the intellect of a spud. I don't blame Jay Inslee. He's a politician. I don't even blame Bob Ferguson. He's a politician. Politicians are going to do what politicians do. They're going to serve their special interests. They're going to serve their future political campaigns and their political ambitions. I don't blame them. I think they're stupid. Bob Ferguson's smart, but the things he does are stupid for a smart person. I think they're corrupt. I think that they care about themselves and not the people that they're supposed to serve, but I don't blame them because this is what politicians do and it's what we expect of politicians. And it's why our founding fathers understood the importance of a free press. Our founding fathers knew that politicians were prone to corruption, that politicians were prone to making bad decisions, that in a free country, you would have to have someone, something, some entity standing in the breach to protect people from the politicians they put in office. And that's supposed to be the free press. And that's who I blame for all of this, because we have no free press. We have a press that is A, incompetent in a lot of instances, an example of which I'll give you momentarily, or B, captured by the Democratic Party. Case in point, the Seattle Times editorial board yesterday put out a scathing op-ed against Jay Inslee about this whole budget crisis. The headline, Ferguson and new legislature must contain a runaway budget. They wrote, this bleak budget is not the result of a recession or any external economic factors. It's a self-inflicted wound by Governor Jay Inslee and ruling Democrats in Olympia who managed to outspend even dramatic rises in tax revenue over the past decade. They went on to say, the 2025 legislative session must be a return to budget sustainability, emphasizing a reining in of spending before any increases to taxes are considered. Let that sink in. The Seattle Times editorial board. The editorial board that endorsed incumbent Democrats, that endorsed candidates who went to Olympia and voted to pass all these tax increases, who went to Olympia and were part of, again, in their words, the self-inflicted wound, the ruling Democrats in Olympia who managed to outspend even dramatic rises in tax revenues over the past decade, you supported them and provided cover for them every step of the way. And then you turned around and you endorsed their campaigns on the pages of your editorial section. And now you want to complain. You want to complain about the budget situation that we're in, that you allowed to happen. The only way we're in a crisis like this is when the media doesn't do its job. Do you think in 2019, when Republicans were sounding alarm bells about our out-of-control spending and their thirst for more cash, if the Seattle Times editorial board and the media had taken it seriously and looked at the numbers for themselves and said, you know what, they're right, we're on a really bad trajectory here, and sounded alarm bells as they should have every step of the way, that we would be in this budget crisis? And for the Seattle Times to say, to have the audacity to say, the legislative session must be a return to budget sustainability, emphasizing a reining in of spending before any increases to taxes are considered. You just supported, on the pages of your editorial section, voters keeping some of the most massive tax increases and spending increases that our state has seen in decades. You opposed the repeal of the Climate Commitment Act, even though you know it's a farce, even though you know it's costing the lower class and the middle class more money, even though you know because they sat in front of you and admitted in your Seattle Times endorsement little meeting that they had no barometer for success for the Climate Commitment Act. You opposed the repeal of the capital gains tax. All this new money they brought in, all the wealth it's scaring out of our state. Jeff Bezos, the guy they passed the tax for in the first place, packed up and moved to Florida because of it. So you have supported and provided cover for any new tax that they want. Fine, you want a new tax? Great. Oh, this is such an important woke thing to do for our environment or whatever it is. And you supported it, signed, sealed, delivered. And then you turned around and you've endorsed all of the Democratic candidates who voted yes on these new taxes, who voted yes on new spending, who have been responsible for bloating our budget massively over the last 15 years, not the least of which is Bob Ferguson. You endorsed Bob Ferguson for attorney general as he ran for attorney general. You gave him your wholehearted endorsement for governor. He voted to raise taxes $1 billion when he was on the King County Council. He doubled the size of the Attorney General's office in the 12 years that he was there. And then you turned around and you endorsed him for governor despite all the lies he was telling on the campaign trail about being a change agent and caring about public safety. And he's still telling your paper lies last week, telling them that he cares about fiscal responsibility. All of a sudden he's going to be the governor of fiscal restraint and responsibility. And now you're whining? The editorial board is whining about the state of our budget, about runaway spending. You sign off on it and run cover for them 99% of the time, and occasionally, when it's low-hanging fruit, you call them out so you can keep up some sort of appearance of being a watchdog of government, of being a free press that can call out elected officials when they need to be called out. Bullshit. As I said before the election, the Seattle Times editorial board was the single biggest disappointment of the 2024 election cycle. Because at one point, they were moderates. And their voice does matter. It's the largest newspaper in the state. They appeal to what I think are corporate-minded Democrats. Center-left. People who we need to wake up. And you tell them 99% of the time, 350 days a year, that what Democrats are doing is absolutely great, and you sign off on it, and you sign off on their candidates because Republicans bad, orange man bad. So we're going to sign off on all the candidates, all the elected leaders, all the incumbents who have done this to our state. And then you expect us to believe that you actually care about fiscal restraint and about budgeting and about cutting runaway spending before you increase new taxes? You allowed them to do this. You allowed them to get away with it. It is your fault, not just the Seattle Times editorial board, although I think they're particularly bad and disingenuous. Not a single conservative on the editorial board, not one. It's the media system as a whole. Now, I go after the ed board because I think they know better. I think they're smarter than that. I think they know that what I'm saying is true. But like most media, they don't want to admit fault. They don't want to be introspective. They don't want to believe for one second that they're responsible for some of what's happened in this state, so they won't change course. So I go after them the most because they know what they're doing is wrong, and they know what they're doing is hurtful, and they know what they're doing is just absolute, utter nonsense. Now, for many others in the media, it's a lack of knowledge / incompetence / laziness. And I worked in mainstream media for 13 years. I know this to be true. You have reporters who don't know shit about what's happening in politics in Washington State being assigned to cover politics in Washington State. There was an example, Governor Jay Inslee. I'm just going to roll right into this, Nicole, if that's all right. Governor Jay Inslee and his wife Trudy sat down to do a kind of exit interview, right? When you leave office, you want to do an interview about your legacy and whatever it is. So if you're Jay Inslee and you're looking for the most friendly TV interview you can do, where do you go? You go to New Day Seattle on King 5 News. And that's what this was. This was a soft interview when it should have been an incredibly forceful interview about the situation that Governor Jay Inslee is leaving the state of Washington in. I don't even know who this anchor is. I'm sure they're a perfectly nice person, but the interview was atrocious, and it shows what I'm saying. I don't know if it's incompetence, lack of knowledge, inexperience. I don't think it's bias. I think it's more likely probably inexperience or a lack of working knowledge of politics and what Inslee has done in the budget and what he's done in his 12 years. So basically, Inslee got to sit there next to Trudy and just like sing his own praises on King 5 News. He talked about, we'll play a couple clips. Why is Washington such a progressive leader?
We're just a very innovative place, very dynamic. We always want to push the envelope. And that goes to technology. It also goes for policy. So we have the most innovative climate change policies. We have the most innovative long-term care provision that Washingtonians just voted to keep. We have the best financial aid package so people can go to college, and the best apprenticeship program so people can go into the skills. We've advanced in early child education. We've advanced in gun safety. So we're pushing the envelope, not just in technology, not just in software, but we're pushing the envelope on policy as well. And I think that is in the nature of Washingtonians. And we want everybody to thrive, not just the ones maybe at the top who've been here for five generations, but for new folks, Washingtonians. We've had 1 million people come into our state since I've been governor because people recognize this is a great place to realize your dreams.
Yeah.
I think it's in the water.
God. Also talking about Donald Trump, and he can't undo the good that we've done here.
We know that the new president is antithetical to many of the things we believe in the state of Washington. So there's going to be tensions with him, as there were during his first rodeo, certainly on climate change. His denial of the clear science is very disappointing. You know, we've had forest fires in our state. We have two whole cities burned down that I've tried to help, and he refused to help. That's disappointing. But the good news is we will be able to advance what we're doing in Washington undisturbed by him. About 85% of the things we're doing in our state, he really cannot interfere with on the climate change front.
Good stuff. So glad to hear that. Oh, and then what is he going to do next? Let's see what he told King 5 about his future plans.
I want to continue to work in the clean energy space to find a way to continue the progress we've made in our state. And I'll look for opportunities to do that. But right now we're running through the tape. We got some work to do.
Oh my God. You mean, I never would have guessed this. You mean Governor Inslee is going to work in the climate sector after he's governor? Man, I swear this really smart podcaster said that like 2 years ago. I swear to God, and then repeated it a bunch of times before the election. Yeah, Governor Inslee pushed all this climate agenda so he could create programs that he could financially benefit from once he leaves office. I said, I give it a month before he has a seven-figure job in the climate sector. That's always been what this is about. But that whole interview, and look, like I've been there. I don't know who this anchor is. I have no idea. Didn't recognize him. Nothing against them personally, but this is the best that news stations can do. They've gotten rid of most of their legacy journalists. They've gotten rid of dedicated political reporters, people with institutional knowledge of the market. You know, King 5 News, for instance, had some of the best in the state. But years ago, they ended up getting rid of all of them because they were paid just too much money. And so what do they do now? Well, they bring in for 60, 70 grand a year, young reporters, young anchors. It used to be to get to a city like Seattle as a reporter or an anchor, you had to make a few stops along the way. You had to put some work in. You had to show that you were one of the best out there. This is a major market, but that's not the case anymore. There are some good ones out there still. But an interview like that, I mean, at the very least, put Drew Mickelson on an interview like that. Put someone who covers Washington politics, who will ask Governor Inslee some hard questions, not sit there like, yeah, oh, I'm glad Trump can't hurt the climate. This is what I'm saying, is there's no interest with an interview like that. That should not be a pleasant interview for the governor. No interview for a governor should ever be pleasant. And I do mean that. It is not the media's job to give any politician a platform to talk about their accomplishments. That sounds mean, right? But that's not our job. It's not our job to extend our platforms to them to let them sing their own praises, even if they are leaving office after 12 years. There are a million things to criticize Governor Inslee about in this moment. There are a million things to criticize him about what he's done over the last 12 years. But none of that happened. And he knew that. That's why he chose a platform like New Day Seattle to go on so he could have some wonderful swan song interview. If the governor really wants to, and not just us, I mean, I think there are a couple, you know, sit down with Chris Daniels at Como. Sit down with Drew Mickelson at King 5. Come on, you want to really do, you want to do an exit interview, Governor Inslee? Come on down to the Undivided Podcast. And we'll give some of the other members in the media, of the media in our state, a reminder of what it looks like to actually be a journalist and to care about the check that you have on people in power. Now, look, we do opinion. I get it. We can be much harder. I don't expect the news outlets in Seattle, the bona fide news outlets, to do what we do. I don't want them to do what we do. Their job is to report the news, but it is also to be critical and ask hard questions. Our job is to give our opinion. I don't expect them to do that. I didn't expect this New Day interview to be about that. But that doesn't mean, there's almost this belief that you have to like very passively approach your job as a journalist these days. No, you can be aggressive. You can push back. You can ask hard questions. And without that, and it's only getting worse and worse by the day, and even when you have the Seattle Times editorial board, which can give their opinion, which is also lockstep with the party in power, which isn't asking the party in power hard questions or pushing back on their policies, we're all just screwed. I go back to, I don't blame the politicians. I blame the press. Genuinely, from the bottom of my heart, that is the problem here. Also, I just want to know, as Governor Inslee is on King 5 News bragging about all the great things we've done with the climate, and I'm going to leave here and go into the climate sector, just thought it was a good time to share this story from the Center Square. Washington could rely on other states for almost half its energy by 2050 because of these insane energy policies. State Department of Commerce Senior Energy Policy Specialist Austin Scharf warned the Senate Environment, Energy, and Technology Committee at its December 13th meeting that by 2050, Washington could rely on out-of-state electrical sources for 43% of its energy. An inability to access cheap and abundant wind and solar resources across the West will increase the cost of the clean energy transition and the ability of Washington to produce hydrogen and synthetic fuels. The state will have to double the amount of electricity it generates by 2050, which it won't be able to do. Thus, you have to go to other states that don't have such shit energy policy to be able to get energy to keep the lights on here. A 2023 study found that clean energy projects have faced opposition in 45 states, noting that such pushback is widespread and growing. Meanwhile, the leaders of a separate clean energy project in Washington have warned that the state will face greater risks of rolling blackouts due to an inability to meet grid demand, which we've said over and over and over again. Meanwhile, what is the state of Washington doing? What is the city of Seattle doing? What is King County doing? What are environmental groups doing? They're suing to ban natural, to essentially be able to ban natural gas in your home and business. While all the evidence shows that if we have to move toward this electrifying our homes, we're going to have to get half of our electricity from a different state that does have the ability to export it to us. And so all of this is, I mean, we know, we've talked about the studies on the show, these goals that they set for the environment, they're not realistic. They're never going to be able to come to fruition. We'd have to have one third of the landmass in Washington state be wind turbines and solar panels. And then you'd also have to have offshore wind turbines. We're never going to be able to do any of that. And solar panels are a stupid thing to do in one of the cloudiest states in the nation. These are so Jay Inslee could act like a climate governor, could run for president and get 1% or less as the climate presidential candidate, and could then leave office to the climate sector where he just acknowledged he's going to try to go and bring in a seven-figure salary. And by 2050, he'll be dead. Sorry, is that crass? By 2050, he's how old? Nicole, can you look up how old Governor Jay Inslee is? 73. By 2050, he's either going to be 100 years old or he's going to be dead. He's probably not going to be with us anymore, and that will be sad. Don't want anybody to die. I'm not wishing anybody death. But it's easy to set these climate goals and call yourself the climate governor for setting a goal, a lofty goal, that you will never have to be around to answer to the fact that it's not possible. I mean, I know you guys get what I'm saying. It's hard because it's really challenging for me to watch what's happening, like clear-eyed, and try to understand why so many people keep voting for this. I mean, we're going to be in such a bad situation in a few years. Our economy is going to be devastated if they push through a wealth tax, if they keep increasing taxes on businesses. I don't think that they're ready for Amazon to pick up and leave, which I think is a distinct possibility. And then what will they do? If they can't, there's no other way for them to tax wealth or tax the rich, because every time they do, more rich people just leave, more entrepreneurs choose a different state. So who's left to tax? Who's left holding the bag? You are. I am. The middle class is. The poor are. And the taxes on them will be higher than ever. All right. I've told you guys, speaking of saving money, because the government's going to screw you over, to take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. We all need insurance. You can't get away from that. And so the question is, do you have the right insurance to meet your needs? And do you have the best possible price? Well, First Mark Insurance can help you figure that out. That's what they do. And they do it for free. You never have to pay First Mark Insurance anything for their services. We get endless emails from undivided viewers and listeners just thanking us for recommending First Mark. Michelle says, thank you for recommending First Mark. I kept mentioning it to my husband, but he wasn't ready to look into it. Then they got their renewal from their existing provider for the next 6 months. It was going to go from $3,000 to $8,000. She says, I promptly reminded my husband about First Mark. We worked with Brad at First Mark. He saved us more than 50%. We can now continue our discussions about getting a travel trailer. Love to hear it. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. That's a new jingle I made for them. All right, we're doomed. I wish I had some like fun news today, but we truly are doomed. So there is this headline that absolutely caught my attention in the Seattle Times. Nicole, do we have the actual headline? Do we have clips from it? We don't have the headline. The headline in King 5, lockboxes, a controversial solution to child safety in Washington homes with fentanyl use. State documents show kids in the child welfare system are dying or nearly dying at record rates. The King 5 investigators expose a controversial solution. So what is the general gist of it? We'll play some clips from this. The general gist of this is that, what are you saying?
You didn't play our unbelievable sounder.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. It's unbelievable. So the general gist of this is the state's solution to protecting kids in homes where there's deadly drug abuse and parents abusing fentanyl is to provide them, look at me when I say this, to provide them with lock boxes to lock up their drugs. King 5 News spoke to an aunt. She's been trying to get custody of a family member of her two nieces and nephews. She said there's records of fractured bones, burns, long stretches of missed school days. She says the kids are in danger. So here's what DCYF did. They gave the nieces and nephews in the household this solution to help keep them safe from their drug addict parents.
Danielle says an incident in the fall should have been the parents' last chance. Court records show her three-year-old niece overdosed on tranquilizers.
CPS did not take the children away.
No, they did not, because they said that they did not have enough. There's enough evidence.
While CPS didn't remove the kids from the home, they did give the family a tool aimed at keeping the home safe. A lockbox.
You guys, this is the state we're living in. You have parents in a home, and there's evidence of, according to this woman, fractured bones, burns, long stretches of missed school days. Says the kids are in danger. Well, of course they're in danger. Their parents are abusing one of the deadliest drugs known to man. We've already had kids die in homes because they came in contact with fentanyl. Even if fentanyl wasn't even part of the equation and you have kids showing signs of abuse, long stretches of missed school, that should be enough for the state to take them out of that home while they figure out what's going on. And I'm all for parental rights, but I'm not for child abuse. But then you add fentanyl into the equation and you believe that parents so irresponsible that they are willing to use a deadly drug around their young children are going to take the precaution of locking up those drugs when they're not actively in use inside the safety of a lockbox. That is government. That is Washington state government. A lot of this stems back to the Keeping Families Together Act, which we've discussed on this show. So this was a couple years ago, and some Republicans voted for it. Now, they now argue they were sold a bill of goods. It didn't do what they thought it would do, but it basically increase the threshold for whether a child could be removed from a home simply because of fentanyl abuse or drug abuse. It didn't characterize that as an imminent danger. And the goal, they said, is we need to keep more families together. Yeah, because the goal of government should be finding ways to keep children in the home of drug abusing parents. Yeah, that's the goal of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. A-plus stuff. King 5 News shared stats on how many child deaths there's been since the Keeping Families Together Act went into place.
We reported on a law passed in 2021 aimed at keeping more kids with their parents. We found since then, more children in the state system are dying. State records show in the last 4 years, the number of kids in foster care has plummeted, down 28%. But deaths and near deaths of children involved with CPS went up by 114%.
Yeah, that's the Keeping Families Together Act. There has been some desire or an expressed willingness from Democrats to try to fix this thing. There was a slight fix this past legislative session. Did not go far enough, not in the slightest. And this is, what do you even say about that? In what world? This shows you the incompetence of government. In what world would any sane, rational person believe that an adequate solution to protecting children from fentanyl abusing parents is to give their parents a lockbox to lock up their drugs? You think, have you seen somebody using fentanyl before? Of course you have, if you've driven in downtown Seattle. You've seen what someone looks like when they're high on fentanyl, right? Folded in half, sprawled out on a sidewalk. So you think after one of these parents takes a hit of fentanyl, that they're gonna have the presence of mind to take that syringe or whatever way they put it in their body. Got my fentanyl hit. Now I'm gonna take my syringe, lockbox, lock it up, beep, 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 fold in half. That's not happening. I hate to laugh about it, but you guys, this is mental. This is insane. King 5 spoke to someone from DCYF.
Do you think that you guys are doing this safely?
Yes.
Doreen Perez is an official with the state agency charged with keeping children safe, DCYF.
We certainly think that this is an opportunity to prevent harm. If it's not being provided, then there's no opportunity. And without that, there's no opportunity to try and keep them safe.
Is that the best you can do? You know what the best opportunity to prevent harm is? Take the kids away. Take the kids away. You can't keep a family together if somebody in the family dies. You can't keep a family together. You can't keep kids with their parents if the kid is dead. That's not keeping families together. And if a parent is not willing to get help, I mean, they're not going to be a good motivator. If a parent truly loves their kids but is just addicted to drugs, is to take those kids away, make sure those kids live, that they are somewhere safe. And then the parents, I'm not saying take them away forever. People can recover from addiction. But you think that they're going to be able to recover from addiction, raise kids, and figure it all out on their own with the help of a lockbox. There's not one parent addicted to fentanyl or any drug that is putting that drug in a lockbox while they're not using it. DCYF, for the love of God. That is one of the craziest stories of the year that I have seen. Absolutely unbelievable. All right, we'll get to national news coming up next. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, home sales have really slowed down, but home prices are still strong. Our friend Wes Jones says that if you are planning on selling your home, you just might need a little extra help and TLC before it hits the market.
You know, I'm hearing a lot of things. People are all, oh gosh, well, you know, there might be a recession coming up. I'm like, hey guys, anybody working in real estate has been living it for like the last 30 months or so. It's a strange conundrum though, because sales are low, but prices are still very, very high. You can still sell and you can plan on making a lot of money, but you might have to prepare your home a little bit harder and do a little bit more work than you have in the past because buyers are a little bit, you know, less forgiving.
Yeah, and Wes Jones can help you with all that. They have something awesome called the Listing Boost Concierge Service. If you need some cosmetic upgrades, he can handle those. He can handle the projects, contractors, so you don't have to do jack. And they can even help you pay for it up front if you need. So cool service there. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, some national news. Blue state leaders are insane gaslighters. I mean, to levels that should wake anybody up, but it won't. So we'll just keep talking about it until maybe one day it does. So Gavin Newsom, I swear to God. So keep $24 billion in California has evaporated on the homeless, spent on the homeless crisis. And much like Washington, the homeless crisis in California is much worse. Totally unaccounted for. $24 billion. No progress on homelessness. No accountability, and much like Washington, you can also apply that to a lot of other areas where money is spent on things and there is no meaningful progress whatsoever. I mean, they spent tens of millions of dollars in California, much like Washington, going after the first Trump administration. Now Gavin Newsom wants another $25 million allotted to potentially going after the Trump administration for things that haven't even happened yet. And he had the audacity to say this.
We've been working, I don't know, before DOGE was DOGE. I don't know what this is, just like a promo project. We've been doing civil service reform in this state. We've been consolidating job classifications. We've been updating job descriptions in this state.
Ah, yes, California, a poster child for government efficiency. He can stand there with a straight face and say that. It just shows like how, as a politician, you're so used to spewing bullshit nonsense. He can stand there and say, DOGE? Department of Government Efficiency? We've been doing that in California for years. Yeah, the 20-year anniversary of your plan to end your 10-year plan to end homelessness. We just marked the 20-year anniversary of that. Still hasn't happened yet. 20 years later, after you announced it, it's just insane stuff. And much more money quantitatively has been wasted in California than even in Washington state, because their budget is absolutely massive. It's so much bigger than ours. And so they have the same issues with the homeless industrial complex, money being pissed away there, and obviously on these ideologically driven spending programs that do nothing, going after the Trump administration, helping illegal immigrants. So any notion that California is some role model for government efficiency is quite hilarious. So same thing in Portland. where Mayor Ted Wheeler, who of course led Portland, I say that very loosely, through the summer of 2020, as we had riots up in Seattle, they did as well down in Portland, same sort of thing, fire and brimstone, same sort of thing from Ted Wheeler at the time. He was out actively participating in the unrest, excusing the unrest, much like our leaders did here. We had council members who were up in the autonomous protest zone, out there on the line with protesters, didn't say anything about all the craziness happening. That was Ted Wheeler down in Portland, too. Well, here's what he had to say as he's leaving office.
It was hard to have my home firebombed, to have my daughter threatened and chased to school, to have my tires slashed, to have people standing in front of my house. On some nights, it would be people on the far left. On other nights, it would be people holding rifles in front of my daughter's bedroom window. Nobody should have to put up with that. And frankly, when I took office, I said, well, this all just comes with the territory. And I thought of it in that light. But with time, I've come to realize it doesn't come with the territory. It's not the right place to adjudicate differences of public policy. We have city council, we have chambers, we have open communications, and I encourage people to use those tools and not resort to violence when it comes to political differences. And I underscore this point, Ken, because I think we're entering a very dangerous phase here in America where people are starting to accept violence as a means of solving political differences. And this shooting in New York City, to me, is sort of recent example A,
the healthcare executive.
Yes, yeah. of how we're starting to walk down this path of justifying violence if we think it's on our side of a political issue. We cannot go there. And so if there's anything I learned in 2020, it's keep the microphones open, encourage people to sit down and talk, and try to hear what people are saying. If they have legitimate differences, well, we can talk about that. But if people just want to engage in criminal destruction and violence, we have a police car for that too.
Holy smokes, the gaslighting. And look, I'm all for people changing their mind and making realizations that things they did and they said in the past were wrong. Really convenient to be able to do that as you're leaving office. But to wax poetic about the state of discourse in this country, and we're going down this path of violence with people we disagree with, that's been happening in Portland as it has in Seattle for years and years and years. And Mayor Wheeler, you condoned it. You were part of it. You weren't speaking out forcefully in the summer of 2020. Why not? Because it wasn't politically popular for you to do so at the time. Same thing happened in Seattle. And now you want to come out and look. I do feel bad that family members of politicians are targeted and harassed. I know what it's like to be targeted and harassed and assaulted by the far left. It's horrible. But I've also never condoned the behavior of the far left. I've also never complained about it happening to me while I encouraged it happening to other people. You don't think the businesses that were broken into, firebombed, looted, the police officers who were assaulted, wish you would have said exactly what you said right there 4 years ago? So yeah, very convenient as you leave office and as you shed any political concerns or consequences about angering the far left. I agree with what you said, but you said it 4 years too late, and I'm not going to go back and forgive you for the destruction that you allowed to occur in Portland while you were the mayor. All right, two really quick national stories I want to touch on. I don't agree with this Donald Trump lawsuit. So I the one where he sued CNN for defamation, total no-brainer. CNN now has to pay $15 million, or no, not CNN, ABC News, because George Stephanopoulos said that Donald Trump was found liable for rape when he wasn't. So that worked, but then Donald Trump said he had his press conference and he said he's going to go out and he's going to, well, I'll just play the video.
I'm going to be bringing one against the people in Iowa, their newspaper, which had a very, very good pollster who got me right all the time. And then just before the election, she said I was going to lose by 3 or 4 points. And it became the biggest story all over the world because I was going to win Iowa by 20 points. The farmers loved me and I loved the farmers. She brought it from way up, walk away, which it was. And it turned out to be in the election, too, by the way. It was a win by many, many points. And then she brought it down very smartly to 4 a couple of weeks before. And everyone said, wow, that's amazing. He's only up by 4 points. And in my opinion, it was fraud and it was election interference. You know, she's gotten me right always. She's a very good pollster. She knows what she was doing. And she then quit before.
Yeah, I don't know how you sue the newspaper for that. So Trump has sued the Des Moines Register. The lawsuit filed Monday. This is from Reuters. in Polk County seeks accountability for brazen election interference committed by the newspaper and pollster Ann Selzer over its poll published on November 2nd. That poll showed Democratic presidential candidate Kamala Harris leading Trump by 13 percentage points in Iowa. I don't know how you prove that it was done with malice. I guess there's discovery and all of these things, but if somebody's just a crappy pollster, like the consequences for that are people don't believe your polls anymore. So how do you prove that it's something that's done it with malice?
Well, I guess you ask for her data. I think he's not believing that her data showed that. She just said that.
Like made it up. I mean, discovery, you can do that.
Show the data.
I don't know. I don't know. That's one where I'm sort of like, can you?
I do think the goal here is to make the media more accountable. So to actually push them to make sure that everything is backed up with facts. And I see what he's doing here. He's not in it for the money, obviously. Right. He's trying to make the media more accountable. So I'm okay with it. I think it's going to be a waste of time in some cases. So hopefully he knows which ones he's going to win. And typically I think he does, but I don't know if this one will get a little bit sloppy,
he finds something good for him, you know, maybe puts pollsters on notice, but like, does a pollster really take their entire credibility and reputation and flush it down the drain to manufacture things about Donald Trump? I guess, possibly.
I think that was the mentality of a lot of people in media, left.
Yeah, you're right.
Pollsters, everything. And I mean, this is specific. I mean, he's suing the paper with the pollster. So I think it's saying everybody was in on it. And I mean, they never thought he'd come at him.
Polls have been really wrong. I mean, look at 2016. Every pollster essentially was wrong in 2016.
And I think that's more of a data collection issue, because a lot of conservatives will mess with, a lot of people in general will mess with pollsters when you call or text or whatever it is. But I also think that there was probably a little manipulation.
We'll find out, won't we?
We'll find out.
Also, because I have to do a follow-up on the alien thing. So we were saying on the show yesterday, the government just needs to say something about these freaking drones, because the more you pretend that what we're seeing isn't something we're actually seeing, the more we cook up in our brains about what's happening with these quote unquote drone sightings. But I gotta say, I don't think that this statement really makes anything better. Mm-hmm. So the DHS, FBI, FAA, and the Department of Defense put out this joint statement. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but basically they said, the U.S. has a lot of drones lawfully registered with the FAA, and they're flying all over the place. They said the FBI has received tips of more than 5,000 reported drone sightings in the last few weeks, generated approximately 100 leads, and the federal government is supporting state and local officials in investigating these reports. They said, having closely examined the technical data and tips from concerned citizens, we assess that the sightings to date include a combination of lawful commercial drones, hobbyist drones, and law enforcement drones, as well as manned fixed-wing aircraft, helicopters, and STARS mistakenly reported as drones. We have not identified anything anomalous and do not assess the activity to date to present a national security or public safety risk over the civilian airspace in New Jersey or other states in the Northeast. They said, that being said, we recognize the concern among many communities. We continue to support state and local authorities with advanced detection technology and support our law enforcement. I mean, what do you say to that? You're telling me all of a sudden, like just in the last few weeks, there's been a flurry of this weird looking activity, a lot of it concentrated in one place, but it's just sort of mundane reasoning? Is it like this collective psychosis that's been created online where people are seeing people post about it online, so now they're going up and looking at the sky and just spotting things that have always been flying up there and saying it's some sort of alien drone? I don't know. This doesn't make me feel any better. It doesn't make me feel any better.
Well,
but I had to follow up because we said, just put out a statement. Because Donald Trump said, they know what this is. They're just not saying anything.
Well, and if it's a private person and they're just messing with all of these drones, and call them out. Say, that was Joe Schmo down the block. Yeah. He was like doing a show. I mean, I went to the Seahawks game on Sunday and there was this amazing drone halftime show.
I thought it was pretty cool.
It was really cool. And you could just say, like, so-and-so practicing with their drones.
That one's pretty clear. That's like, creating a 100-foot football player in the air. Like, you see that, you know what it is. Like, oh, Seahawks having a, oh, I'd like to call in a sighting. I saw an alien spacecraft and it was in the shape of a 100-foot football player.
No, you know, I'm not comparing. I'm just saying weird. You got people practicing. I don't know. The drones are getting a bit out of control. Maybe we need to regulate them a little bit more then.
I don't know, but somebody said, so there's this one little thing in there. Where is it here? Hold on. Where is it?
The Amazon?
Consistent. No, hold on.
That would have been cool. Had it been just Amazon
God,
practicing
their
deliveries.
God, there was one we continue to support. Oh, here it is. Here it is. Can you pull up that second one?
Yeah.
Because now there's a new conspiracy, right? It says, we recognize the concern among many communities. We urge Congress to enact counter UAS legislation when it reconvenes that would extend and expand existing counter drone authorities to identify and mitigate any threat that may emerge. So some people are saying, oh, this was just a false flag in order for them to push this legislation on Congress.
Oh,
there it is.
Could be.
Maybe. All right, we'll get to our Daily Show poll, comments, sanity check coming up first. Have you looked at your retirement portfolio lately, and have you considered getting a second opinion on it? I mean, I know it's like part of it's just, hey, let it cook. But do you have somebody managing your retirement portfolio who is actively managing risk based on what's happening nationally, what's happening globally? Risk management is Bulwark Capital's number one focus, and they believe, no different than, you know, critical healthcare decisions, that when it comes to the health of your retirement portfolio, it's good to get a second opinion. So you can get that second opinion with Bulwark's free Know Your Risk Portfolio Review, where they will cover the impacts of the election and outlook for 2025, and a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. You only get one retirement, so get a second opinion. Schedule your free portfolio review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Okay, I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X about Governor Inslee's proposed wealth tax. I said Governor Inslee is recommending a modest 1% tax. Modest is his word, by the way. 1% tax on wealth over $100 million. Do you support this proposal? Nicole, do I even have to ask you today?
No.
Because if you said yes, you're fired.
Right.
Absolutely done. We're just canceling the show at that point. 96% of people saying no. Jay Thomas Peterson, no, absolutely not. Tax those over $100 million and they'll just leave the state. Then who will they tax? The next lower group, and so on until they're taxing those with anyone with more than 1 cent. No, absolutely not. And I got a lot of that. People saying this is just a slippery slope, and it doesn't solve the problem they're trying to solve for at all. Eric says, and feed the state government's addiction to spending? Absolutely not. That's a big part of it for me. Is you have no control over your spending. You are so money hungry, I don't care what tax it is. I don't care if it's a tax on serial killers. I'm not even gonna support it at this point, because you need to stop believing that taxation is a solution to all our problems when you have so much money and you're spending it to such poor effect. Adrian says no, because they can't be trusted to keep it that way. The old give them an inch, they'll take a mile thing. Plus they squander all the money anyway. Yeah, I agree. Let's see here. Jackie says, hell no. Joel, Inslee has never seen a tax increase he didn't like. This is the guy who ran for governor saying he wasn't going to increase taxes. Nicole from Medium Claw says, nope, no new taxes, not even a thought of new taxes until they're accountable and responsible for their current budget. Also, we all know it is a tax on the wealthy today and a tax on the middle class tomorrow. Right, because when those people leave, as was pointed out earlier, they are going to go to the next person who they can tax, and they're going to find a way to tax them, because this isn't doing the trick. So it's just ridiculous. Okay, let's see here. Let's get to some comments, shall we? Bill Biz, holy smokes! Bill.
Merry Christmas to us.
Is Bill going to be subject to the wealth tax? Bill has got a lot of money. He gives $100 super chat. Man, I'll buy myself something nice. Brandy and Nicole, a little extra support for the show. Appreciate your efforts to promote sanity here in Washington. Merry Christmas to you, your families, Miranda and Daryl. That is so nice.
So precious.
That is so nice. Sorry, I'm going to drink Kirkland branded water on air because I didn't bring a cup.
Delicious.
Kirkland's finest. Let's see. Nancy C, $19.99 super chat, just for no reason. Thank you, Nancy. Patrick Joseph, Jay Inslee and his replacement, I like calling him his replacement, will continue to destroy Washington because voters keep on reelecting these idiots who have no consequences. I'm really considering an independent run for governor in 2028. I am. I'm going to say it.
Yeah.
I am genuinely considering an independent run for governor in 2028.
Okay.
If not for anything else, then to have a platform for more people to hear this insanity.
I'm in.
You know, the first 15 minutes of the show, not to say I have the answers to everything, but people need to understand how backward what's going on is and how they will pretend that they're doing you a favor by taxing the rich when they're doing no favors for you. They're not decreasing your taxes, and taxing the rich only ultimately increases your taxes when the rich people leave. I mean, there are some basic things here that the media isn't talking about that, yes, we have a platform and I love it and I love doing the show. And I would continue doing the show because I would never be able to win a bid for governor as an independent. But I think there are a lot of things going on that need to be understood outside this echo chamber of sort of common sense, independent thinkers, if anything is going to be able to change. And I don't know, you know, I think a lot about, do you watch Pierre Poilievre in Canada?
No.
He's so good. He's, you know, like the challenger to Justin Trudeau,
right?
You know, and
I've seen that one commercial. I think we played a commercial.
Yeah, he's the way that he is able to articulate, and he's, you know, the leader of the opposing party, and so he's got a platform to be able to do that. The way he's able to articulate the spending issues in Canada and what's going on with taxes and with overspending, I think has woken a lot of people in Canada up. And we just need people to understand that, like, even if you believe, because I do believe that we have a regressive tax structure, of course I do. You can't look at the numbers and manipulate them to believe that the middle class doesn't pay a disproportionate amount of their income toward taxes. But the solution to fix that isn't to just drive taxes up for the other side. The solution to fix that is appropriate spending that drives taxes down and actually results in tax cuts. In 2019, we had so much money in this state. We had money overfloweth in this state. And not once did they even consider or ponder giving some of that money back to the segment of the population that they claim to care about the most. You could easily, nothing stopping them at all, with all that money they had coming in, nothing stopping them from giving some sort of tax break to the middle class. Some sort, write them a check, send it in the mail. Instead, they said, no, we know how to spend that money better than you, so we're going to spend that money on all these programs that we think are important. It's out of control, and something has to change. I don't know what's going to change, but I will say I'm seriously considering it. If not for any other reason, then the mainstream media has to cover what we say about what's wrong with the state.
I love
it. Who else is going to do it?
That's a great idea.
Who else is going to do it? We've been toying around with this for some time.
Mm-hmm.
The concern that I would have is it's hard to win. I don't like doing things that I can't win.
Mm-hmm.
And I would never run as a Republican or a Democrat. It's completely antithetical to everything I believe in. I think both parties are incompetent. We saw that absolutely with the Republican Party this last election. And so I don't like doing things I can't win. I think it's very hard to win without party infrastructure, without party funding,
right,
without the rules and all of those things and all of that. But at some point, it's like, well, Republicans can't win anyway.
Well, you said that going into this with Riker. You
they
said,
can't win anyway.
If he can't win then as a Republican, then there is not a Republican that can win.
And I still cannot believe give that, you a name of a Republican that could win.
Yeah, so I think the only downside is obviously pulling votes from a Republican if we did think he could
win.
Yeah,
but they'd lose anyway.
He or she.
Right, they'd lose anyway, so I wouldn't care.
So then who cares? Yeah. I don't know.
We got 4 years to sort it out. Yeah. 4 years to sort it out. All right. Rachel says education, housing, and childcare, the magic words they use to justify tax increases. It's getting really old. Yep. And that now they can do that. Remember, I don't remember who told us this, but basically with that law that they passed that says that if somebody tries to run an initiative to repeal a tax, that you could essentially build into that, if you know it's going to be subject to an initiative, you could dedicate 0.00001% of the funding to cancer treatments for kids. And then you could say on the ballot, if you repeal this, you're taking money away from cancer care for kids.
Mm-hmm.
They could do that. And they will.
They will.
Because they manipulate things in that way. They've already manipulated the system in their favor, and there's no low for them. There's no bottom for them. Nightwolf. I like that. Screen name, Nightwolf. Tax the rich means bankrupting the middle class and down. Charlie K. We need real leaders that will speak up for what is right, even when it's not popular. Baron of Gray Matter with a $5 super chat. Notice WAGOP is nowhere to be found. They aren't advertising against this. Normies aren't paying attention. WAGOP needs to make them look. But nope. I'll say, I was on the phone earlier. I won't put them on blast with a Republican member of the state house trying to, because I got this budget thing and we're like 45 minutes to air and it's 78 pages and I'm trying to understand where I need to look to get the bottom line numbers. And I just like, you guys need to have a press conference today. Every member of the House Republican caucus in the Senate Republican caucus should be on, if they can get here, should be on the steps of the Capitol today saying you will not get one Republican vote for this budget. You will not get one Republican vote for a tax increase. And if you push through a single new tax, a single tax increase, it will be 100% the doing of the Democratic Party in the state. They should have that ready today, and that's what they need to be doing. Mm-hmm. Marksman Hitman lost my Christmas spirit, and now I feel sick. I'm sorry.
I mean, the budget bummed him out.
Your Christmas spirit?
We'll bring it back.
Fernie Coe, that's an insult to potatoes. I like potatoes, but not the Democratic politicians. I couldn't think of anything like more just sort of,
just I
love,
an object.
You know, look, I love mashed potatoes.
Oh,
but there's no brain activity
Brandy's
there, you
favorite
know?
Food.
What was that old show? What was like, no. Was it a show or a book? It was a show and a book. Goosebumps. You remember Goosebumps?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like the kind of kid horror.
Yeah.
It was books, but it was also a series, right? On TV you could watch.
Yeah.
There
like
was
that.
One where a potato came to life and it was an evil potato with like teeth and stuff. So that's kind of what I think about. Nicole's Cat with a $4.99 super chat. I know my mom had to get a lockbox to lock up my catnip. Thanks for keeping us together.
So random.
Oh yeah. Best podcast ever. Merry Christmas. Matt Gilbert, $10 super chat. Brandy, gaslighting isn't real. You're just crazy. I mean, I am crazy, but gaslighting is real.
It's also
I get
real.
What you're doing. Mm-hmm. Very, very creative. Robert Parker, don't be distracted by the drone chaos. Recognize when they are planning to take more of your rights. See HR 8610 and read it carefully, weaponizing state and local government against citizens. I will copy that. And we will look at that mm-hmm. for the show tomorrow. Jennifer Schoonmaker, I wish more people would listen to your common sense. So hard to have a successful business in this state. You know, and also, we're going to test the limits on what they consider media in Olympia this year. I pay taxes in this state as a media outlet, as a media company. So if Bob Ferguson or whoever it is going to stop me from going to press conferences in Olympia, then I want a refund.
Love it.
Then I want my money back for the taxes that I paid as a media company in the state of Washington. If you're going to ban me. And I don't know. I haven't tested it yet.
Yeah.
I haven't tested the waters, but I'm going to dabble.
Well, we tested it a little bit last
Well, I went down to the legislative preview, but I was invited by the press corps, so they couldn't tell me no. And but Jay Inslee took my questions.
But they included you, is what I'm saying. So this year worked. We'll
I
see if it continues.
Think Bob Ferguson. My prediction is if I make it clear that I'm going to go to the legislative preview and ask questions, that Bob Ferguson will not attend. That's my. I actually think that he cares that much. That he would be that angry about it, or he'd ask them to not let me attend. But that's a government building paid for with taxpayer mm-hmm. funds, and technically anyone can go and sit in on anything. You don't have to be a member of the media. You could walk in and literally just walk into the legislative preview.
But he doesn't have to call on you.
Right? Well, he doesn't have to call on me. I think it would be entertaining.
I know, but
I think it'd be entertaining.
That might be his way.
And I would only. And mm-hmm. did I act up at the legislative preview last year? No, I asked legitimate questions. I wasn't. I asked legitimate questions. I didn't even make them opinion based.
No.
So, I mean, I'm going to go there and I'm not going to like cause a scene. I've never caused a scene anywhere. Ms. Jennifer, you probably would have less negativity from people going door to door being an independent. Yeah. I went door to door for Dave Riker and there wasn't a ton of negativity. A couple door slams. It was mostly anger about Trump, though. It really was never about Dave Riker. It was about Trump. Like, I'm not voting for a Republican. You know?
Yeah. I just think that if you're not hardcore lefty liberal, then you're called a Republican anyway.
Right.
So that's what's a little hard to get around.
Yeah, by all means, though. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I have an itch on my nose. Nicole's like, can I give you cover? That's all right. By all means, spend the next 4 years raising taxes, spending more money, passing unemployment benefits for striking workers, passing rent control, passing a wealth tax, scaring mm-hmm. businesses away, proving that you can't hire more police officers because they don't want to work for you, passing the bill that would make homelessness a protected class. By all means, Bob Ferguson, spend the next 4 years doing that and set someone up, even if it's not me, for a successful run for governor against mm-hmm. you. I can think of a couple people who would be good. I'm not going to put them on blast, but infamous Papa Woody, $2 super chat. It's just Woody Dipsley is feckless. Dipsley is feckless. Robert Parker, $5 super chat. Just because you put Nicole more on camera today, you guys are the best. Are you on camera more today than usual?
But no, I don't think
so. Yeah, first of all, I don't get to choose when she's on camera. She hits her own buttons. See, hit the button. Bye, Nicole. I'm just kidding. She controls her own destiny. She was supposed to be on camera earlier, and then we realized her mic wasn't working. So then we just did a quick fix behind the scenes. But
all good.
That, calling our show, how many places was our show publicly called a baffling level of incontinence? Which was my fault, by the way. I wrote incontinence.
I missed it, though. I proofread everything but the title.
I think it's entertaining.
Just in three spots.
A baffling level of incontinence. Haven't we all been there? Haven't we all at some point had a baffling level of incontinence?
Yeah,
yeah, it's fine. It's normal. Yeah. It's natural. Don't be ashamed.
You gotta run.
It's fine. What am I doing? Oh, okay. Thank you, Nicole.
Yeah.
See how she did that herself? I don't control that. I don't control that. I don't think Nicole loves being on camera.
Well, it just depends on what I'm doing.
Just depends, yeah. with that, let's get to our closing sanity check, shall we? We're going pretty long today. All right. Let's...
I kind of cropped that off there.
Let's do it again.
Oh, geez.
Why not? Thank you. That feels better now. It wouldn't feel right if we chopped it off. All right. Donald Trump made it clear. When he's president, federal workers got to get back in the office or they're going to get gone.
And if people don't come back to work, come back into the office, they're going to be dismissed. And somebody in the Biden administration gave a 5-year waiver of that so that for 5 years, people don't have to come back into the office. It involved 49,000 people. For 5 years, they don't have to go. They just signed this thing. It's ridiculous. So it was like a gift to a union. And we're going to obviously be in court to stop.
Yep. So back in the office, I think that is a very sane thing for a lot of government jobs. You have some of these massive buildings spending billions of dollars a year and they're virtually empty. So either you fill them and those positions must not be too important to begin with. I'm a big supporter of that. That has been our sanity check for today. That has been today's extended edition of Undivided. Good luck with your incontinence, everyone. You can give the gift of Undivided, by the way, to a friend or a foe. If you have Bob Ferguson's email, I think you should give him a gift to Undivided. I don't know what it is. We could find out his staff members' names and I can give them a gift of Undivided. patreon.com/undivided/gift. If you have not signed up yourself to support our show, please do so. We have a busy legislative session ahead. It's gonna be a lot of work to be done, and we appreciate your support to help us do this work full time. You can sign up undividedpod.com. undividedpod.com. It's just $5 a month. Screaming deal. All right, what day is it today? Tuesday? Okay,
I think so.
Yeah, I think it's Tuesday. So we will see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.